This episode of Gamerheads is brought to you by Magic Mind, the healthy energy drink that will help you take your creativity to a new level.
Hi, I'm Celia Schilling from Yacht Club Games.
Hey, this is James from Megacat Studios.
Hey, this is Matt, a.k.a. Stormageddon from Reignite, Screen Snark, and the Fun and Games podcast.
This is Stephanie from the Boss Rush podcast and the Boss Rush Network.
Hey, this is Mark and Keon from Bunta Affold.
Hey, this is Sebastian with the ProNerdReport.com and the Single Player Experience podcast.
Hi, this is Chris.
Mike.
And Garrett from Daylight Basement Studio.
Hey, this is BaronJ67 from Level 1 Gaming.
Hey, this is Todd Mitchell from Code Right Play.
Salutations. This is Mike Carroll from Stroll Art.
Hey, this is Jeff Moonen from Fun and Games Podcast.
Hey, this is Patrick from the Backlog Odyssey.
Hey, this is Rune from Runic Codes.
Hi, this is Andrew from Spalato Bros.
Hi, everyone. Jill Grote here from The Indie Informer.
Hey, this is Brimstone, and you're listening to Roger Reichardt on the Gamerheads Podcast.
And welcome to another episode of the Gamerheads Podcast. My name is Roger. This week, I have a very special guest, a good friend of mine. I have Adam from Respawn Aim Fire Podcast. And we'll be talking about gaming technology innovations. But before we get into that, Adam, first of all, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's just like the show floor at PAX East. I'm going to run into you 100 times in a row and just keep on walking. That's what we're doing here tonight.
I know. It was funny. Like, we saw each other, like, I don't know, like 10 times in a matter of like 10 minutes. It felt like it was like, hey, there you are again. It's you.
It was very fun.
You got to, like, what was really funny is we were both heading in the same direction for a game. I'm not going to mention, but it was a game that we were going to play. And I was like, hey, why don't you just come along with me and play during my time to play with that game? And then that didn't work out for me. And then I'm texting him like, actually, that time didn't work out for me. Yeah. I guess I'm not playing that game.
Said game canceled basically everyone's appointments and then was like, we'll sneak you in for another appointment, and then canceled those appointments. So I was like, I'm just going to walk over there. We'll see what's going on.
Oh, that was so funny. Did you get to play said game?
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
It's all right.
Well, before we get into our topic, Adam, tell us about yourself and tell us about your podcast as well.
Oh, hey, I'm Adam. I'm into all things gaming and D&D and just being a cool guy. That's my number one thing. But I am on the Respawn Aim Fire podcast, also YouTube channel. It is a weekly show where we do a little bit of news, but then a lot of segments like game show kind of stuff like that. And then we do have a dedicated game show every month, where we just trade up play like Jeopardy and stuff like that, as well as reviews, backlog reviews, new game reviews, all that kind of stuff. You can Respawn Aim Fire podcast and YouTube. You can check it all out there.
Nice. I have a couple questions before I get into topic. So how did you get into gaming and how did you get into podcasting? Like, what made you decide that this is what you want to do?
Oh man. So gaming. So I had systems before, but I didn't care about gaming until Pokemon came out. Like when I was, I was a kid. And Pokemon came out, and it was the coolest thing ever. So I was like, oh, I actually want to play that video game. So Pokemon Yellow was the first game that I cared about ever. But like, I had like an NES and stuff like that. I just never played them. Like, I don't care, Grandpa. Thank you for the gift. Obviously, I'm going to be thankful because I'm not a bad child. But I did not care.
Yeah,
Pokemon was the one that made me care. And then after that, I basically didn't stop. It was like, I bought an N64 with my own money, bought an original Xbox with my own money. I just like kept going after that and had a good time. As far as podcasting, too long. You ever look up and you're like, man, I've been podcasting for a decade almost. It feels like, not just on Respawn Aim Fire, just like in general, because I started it.
Yeah.
When everyone was like, I'm going to start a podcast. You know, we all say that now, but it was like, there was really a time like 8 years ago when everyone's like, just buy a microphone, do a podcast. It'd be great. So I've been doing it that long. But as far as a gaming podcast, maybe it's been 3 years, maybe four. I don't know. Lost track of time.
What was there other podcast you were on?
Oh, I'm not going to mention it because it doesn't exist, but I had an original, like, we're just going to chat with the buds. Like, we're going to have guy talk podcast because there's never been any of those before. but that was the very first one. That was like 8 years ago. And then I did have a D&D podcast, which is Isle of Misfit Rolls, which has a full 2 seasons. Like, that was really cool to do. And then most popular thing I ever did was a wrestling podcast where we broke down Raw and SmackDown every week. And it was by far the most successful thing I've ever done. We only did it for like a year.
Really?
It was. The numbers were crazy. I'm like, who cares? But apparently, some people were downloading it.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, that's cool. Awesome. It's funny, we should do at some point, so I'm sure there is, but like a Venn diagram of wrestling fans and video game fans, because I'm sure they just like are almost,
well, it's just a circle. Just
completely. Yeah, it's just one circle. Yeah, that's all it is.
Dudes who play fantasy football, like wrestling and play video games, just a big old ball. That's all it is.
Oh, well, I'm so glad that we met at PAX. I mean, we actually talked before PAX, but I'm glad that we were able to meet at PAX, and I'm glad that you were able to join me today. So thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and talking about a topic. I pitched a bunch of ideas to you, and the idea that we decided to talk about is the innovation in gaming, and just have some topics or some questions that we can talk about. Adam, I know you do as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna start with one here, and then, you know, we'll just kind of go back and forth and just talk, you know, this is gonna be just totally like free for all kind of chat type thing. So, but the first thing that I wanted to talk about in regards to like gaming technology innovations, I want to know, Adam, what do you think are the most, what do you think the most significant recent innovations in gaming technology have been?
Oh, see, here's the question. I mean, we'll get to it, but it's like, as far as in gaming or as far as technology all around?
I would say both. Like,
what's the most significant one? I would say the most significant one that's like reached its full potential, because there's a lot of like ideas and things that are in its infancy or that are like midlife, but still fine. Thank the Lord and thank Bill Gates or whoever made it up. SSDs, NVMe, whatever drives, having. Because I remember going into the Xbox Series and the PS5, everyone's like, what are they going to do different? Da, 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 da. And everyone's talking about SSDs and all this fast things. People were like, does it really matter? What's quick resume? Who's gonna care? And I swear, trying to go back and play anything not on SSD feels like I'm in the Stone Age. Like, I need it to load in half a second. I need to be able to turn it off, unplug it, throw it in the bathtub, dry it off, and plug it back in, and my game launches right away still. Like, I can never go back. I think that is like, thank you. Because it feels weird without it now. So I think that's like the one that really stuck.
I agree with that. Because it's weird. Because like, you're right. Because when that was brought up, I was like, oh, who cares about quick resume? Like, okay, that's cool. But then we start playing, you're like, oh, this is actually very cool. And it is also kind of a funny point as well. Because they, you know, they preface it as like lower loading times and such. But when you play like the old like cartridge games, you're like, there wasn't that many loading times in those games to begin with. No. Like, it's kind of but that just shows like how far advanced we've gotten with our, you know, with our graphics and technology, obviously, and such. But you're right. Going back and playing games there are long loading times and you don't have the quick resume, it's not very much like, it's kind of sucks. So that is a really big innovation, I think, in that is current, that has seen its full potential.
Especially if you try to like play an older, you know, last gen game on current gen system where it's like I gotta walk through the hallway and like shimmy through the thing. It's like, obviously they're hiding a load time here. That's like, we can just get rid of those completely. And also, you know, with the speed, you know, that's how you can get better fidelity. Like, you can have more things coming through the pipeline and make things look better. And that leads to a lot of it. I just think it's great. Let's keep it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Which is an interesting point, because I agree with that point. I am beginning to wonder though, from a like hardware standpoint, like how much more we have in regards to innovation looking forward to. Right. Cause like you always hear like, oh, the next console is going to be the true awesome console. We're already hearing it with like PlayStation, which is so weird to me that PlayStation 5 is like, oh yeah, this console's already dead and we're moving on to the next one.
Get a Pro, please.
Yeah. But it's weird, right? Like, because I'm like, how much of the hardware, at what point are we going to be at a point where the hardware is just where it needs, where it can't expand any further than what it currently is. Mm-hmm. And this is where I think like we're going to see things like cloud gaming moving into that. And really, we have seen like Microsoft lean into that. We have seen disasters as well, like Google Stadia.
That's one of them.
Yeah. But I do think cloud gaming might be that one for me is probably one of the ones that I would. It's not quite at its full potential. I mean, it's not even close to its full potential, but I think we're getting closer to it being more realized.
That's a fun one too.
Let's go on.
Cause I've used it a timer here or there. Cause like a game I don't always have installed. Like once in a while, I'll jump into Madden. Cause I don't really play Madden. I'll play it, you know, when football season's happening, and then when it's done, I don't care. Yeah. But you know, Amazon Twitch Prime is like, here's free packs for stuff all the time. Right. And I'll be like, yeah, well, I don't want to download 80 gigabytes worth of Madden just to claim this Ultimate Team pack, but click on the cloud button and I'm in the full game. Everything's there in like 10, 15 seconds. I'm like, this is kind of nice. So I can imagine when like 5G is like really a thing, you know, again, it's possible now, but give it time. And like, could you imagine just like, especially with all these handheld devices that are like cloud based, can you imagine just like sit down with your phone or like a dedicated device and it's just like streaming 4K game in like 10 seconds? That sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing I like about the concept behind cloud gaming is it really like lowers, this is the ideal world, right? This is what I would like it to see. I would like it to see the entry to gaming to be taken away with cloud gaming, right? Because like the entry to buying expensive hardware to be able to play cloud gaming, like I would like to see that removed so that people can start playing games, like have, you know, again, Game Pass on TVs, right? Like you're going to buy a TV, have Game Pass built into it. Boy, now you have access to a whole library of games that you don't have to buy another system to be able to play those games. Like that, to me, I think is the most exciting thing about cloud gaming. It's just taking away that barrier for people to be able to play games.
Yeah, there was a commercial. I think it was for Google Chrome, just like a normal Chromebook. So can you imagine like, all right, I'm a teenage kid. I obviously don't have a lot of money for like a $2,000 gaming PC. But I think the idea was that they were using streaming on Google Chrome and putting it in a fake dummy case to make it like, oh, look at this crazy PC. And people are like, oh, this is great. This is awesome. And then they open the case and there's just a Chromebook inside. And they're like, oh, I didn't know it's been a Chromebook. Yeah. I would love to be able to go out, especially as a kid, being like, all right, I got $200. I saved up over the summer. I bought this device that is like good enough as a device that also allows me to stream games really high quality. And now I can play anything and everything. And I don't have to have enormous amounts of cash to be able to do it. Again, lower that barrier to entry. I think better for everybody overall.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's where the idea behind Google Stadia was there, or Stadia, however you pronounce it, like was there, right? It just wasn't executed well. And I don't think they had the desire for that either. Like, when they first announced it, I believe like the, I don't know, was it the CEO or even the vision head? I'm not quite sure. Said, I don't play games, but here's Google Stadia. I'm like, what? No, that's not cool. Like, but it was a cool concept. Like, you got streaming games. You didn't have to have like awesome hardware, right? You could play the games on Chromecast and, you know, you could, it was awesome. Like, and it was coming out with new games. And I don't know if you remember this, but when that Cyberpunk game came out, it was running terribly on consoles, and Google Stadia was like, works well here. Yeah. Like,
I have a friend who had a Stadia podcast, so he was obviously very invested in Stadia, and he was like, hey, I'm playing Cyberpunk, no problem. I did also have a different friend.
Yeah.
So when Baldur's Gate 3 came out in early access, he didn't have a very new PC to be able to run it super well. So he got it on Stadia and was able to play the early access on his old PC through Google Stadia. And he's like, no, it was great. It felt wonderful. Again, it's just like Google, how invested are they in that technology? Obviously not very much as they closed it down after 2 years. But the idea that someone started that step and now you have people who are more committed to it. Like, I don't know anyone who uses it, but the fact that Amazon Luna is still around is a good thing that they haven't canned it yet. Obviously, Microsoft seems pretty invested in doing that. You know, PlayStation also has it with some of their the catalog is over cloud streaming and stuff. So the people who are into gaming, I'm glad that they're staying with it because I think it can be a really cool thing.
The one thing I will say, the caveat with cloud gaming, and I think this is probably the biggest complaint, is that the, you know, the internet speeds and internet at all, right, is just not where it needs to be infrastructure wise. And it blows my mind that there are caps on internet usage for people in certain states. Like, that's weird.
That is crazy. And it's weird, like, aren't it normally some of the bigger, I guess it's a big city, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of users. But like for me, I have gigabit up and down unlimited. But it's also just because I live in a big enough city that gets it, but not too big where they would put a cap on it. You know, I'm in that perfect middle ground. But I can imagine like living on like a major city on the coast and they're like, yeah, you can have 500 up 20, or you can have like 500 down 20 up, and then you can only use like 20 gigs a month. It's like, that. What is this? What is going on here? Yeah, they've got to get, the nation has to get better about that for this to.
Do you have any, I have a couple other thoughts around that, but do you have any other thoughts around like some of the recent innovations that you feel like are the most significant?
I mean, again, I do have a list of things of gaming technology stuff, so we can loop around to it, but if you want to move on to another question, but I will get through this whole list at some point.
Okay. All right. So another question that I had that I'd like to cover is how have these technologies changed the way that we played games? So I'll start with you. Well, how has technology changed the way that you've played games?
I want to say the biggest one in all of this would have to be AI, right?
Yeah.
And the thing about, I understand that AI just becomes a dirty word where, like, if you want someone to be mad, you just say the word AI. which obviously, like, AI art is, like, when it steals from people, obviously it's bad. When it's stealing people's voices and doing stuff, obviously that stuff is bad. But, like, the idea of AI and machine learning has been in video games forever. Mm-hmm. And just so being able to, nowadays, I used to be mostly console, but at this point, I think I'm like 75% PC nowadays, just because I like, I don't know, I just like it. And being able to have the NVIDIA graphics card and basically having this graphics card say, hey, we're going to use machine learning, AI, I'm sampling, whatever you want to say about it to fake your game. So even though your machine shouldn't be able to handle this, we're going to fake that. Again, I don't know. I'm not a wizard. But basically, this card uses AI and machine learning to make your video game run better and look better without you having to get new parts inside of your machine. Yeah. And that is great. Every time I have played a game, I'm just like, turn it on. And it looks 100 times better immediately. I'm like, this is great. Love it.
That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, that's so I agree. Like, AI is usually a dirty word, right? But things like that where I think using it for technological problem solving, basically, right, to allow basically your tech to be able to operate efficiently, I think is like makes a lot of sense to me. I think also, like, for me, I agree, AI I think is probably the biggest thing that's coming up on a horizon as well that is going to be the biggest game changer. I think when we talk about like hardware, I don't know how much more we can do with hardware, but from an AI standpoint, I think there's a lot that can happen. One of the things that I think with AI that I've seen, and this, again, the things that I think are where it becomes like a dirty word is stealing art. Like, obviously that's not cool. Unfortunately, we've seen a lot of that. Also, we've seen AI used for writing dialogue for people. It's like, okay, now you're taking jobs away from those folks that are, you know, that are writers, right? Like, that's ridiculous. But I do think AI could be used as thought partners, right? Like, for instance, hey, I have this technological problem. I don't know how to solve this. How, you know, help me brainstorm ways that I can get around this issue. And even for like indie developers, to allow them to use it to like proof their code, right? To go through and just make sure their code is running properly and making sure there's no bugs. Like, I think that's and the other thing I'll say, I think that also opens the door for folks that are not great at coding, but may have great ideas for games. AI, like, there's technology that can help you write like code, like, right? You can just say, hey, I'm trying to do this. Help me write the code that can do that. And it will help you write that C# code that you can put into Unity and allow you to like actually build out your what you're looking to build out, right? Like, those to me, I think can help with the gaming industry. But again, it feels like it's the lack of creativity on the people that are like pushing it. Like, we could use it to write scripts. Well, okay. What? That's where you came up with? We could use it to steal art. I mean, to create art. Okay. Really? like this lack of creativity on the part of using AI. Like that is like the easiest thing to do with AI. Like stop doing the easy stuff and actually use it for creativity, right?
Yeah, so. It's like I don't need it to write my name on the paper. I need it for to do the calculus question, you know, or using the idea of a calculator helping me do math instead of writing my
exactly.
But there's also the other thing, talking about like in-game stuff, obviously, like the idea. So I brought it up before, we talked about, but like Nemesis system, and I know you've talked about it recently on a past episode, but the idea of like, okay, to create an interesting dynamic thing for the player, it's like I did a thing in the game, I want the game to take that information and change it around and make it seem more fresh and interesting and unique to me, right? Could you imagine, like, this game wouldn't do it exactly, but, like, if you're playing, like, a Souls game, right? It's like, oh, man, I'm having a tough time with this boss, or I, like, absolutely wiped this boss the one time. And then maybe that boss is like, oh, I remember that, like, you really like to do that jump attack, so I'm just going to put my block up. Not in a way where it's just reading your inputs, and obviously because you couldn't beat that, that'd be impossible. But a way to be like, oh, wow, this dude remembers that I like to jump on top of him with the sword. I got to try to change it up once in a while because he'll defend that. Like that idea of, here's an even dumber one I had. This is my favorite idea of all time, right? Also, I think the Nemesis system is great where he comes back and he's like, you killed me with bees last time. I got bees all over me. I hate it. That was so fun in those games. They're bringing back this year NCAA football 25 or college football 25. It's finally coming back. It's been 11 years. And again, they're not saying this is a game, but this is a thing where like, I would please use AI to figure out this for me. I would love if it's like, okay, I'm starting at as a college coach here. And then like my offensive coordinator leaves and goes to another school. And like, we have a rivalry and we go back and forth and, you know, I've beat him a couple times. He beat me a couple times. I remember the plays that he likes to do. And then like we meet in the national championship, like 7 years down the road. That's like some corny, like sports dad movie stuff. But I would love if a video game did that to me. Like, yo, bro, I remember you were on my staff a long time ago. And that would be like so immersive and so cool. Yes. And again, that's not a thing that you could necessarily like write in a story mode. You just like let the game figure that out as the player plays it. So I'm like, let's do that stuff. That's fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's, I think that was the other thing that I was going to bring up. Like, I think that's a really good point. Like the immersiveness of AI, right? Because it can create that feeling that you have this connection to another coach in that example, right? Where you have this, you know, competitive like aspect with them, and like, yeah, they learn from you, and then you're like, oh crap, oh man, how did they, oh crap, they figured out that play. Like, and like, how many times, I mean, I played NCAA football, and there's a lot of times I'm just like, I'm gonna keep running the same play because you're not smart enough to stop it. Like, right? Like, think about like how they can start learning from how you do things. Like, I think that would be brilliant.
Yeah, coaches study tape in real life. They're like, this is what they like to do in this situation. So imagine like a very, you know, like, oh, his stats are super good in intelligence, so like he can study your tape, so you've got to change stuff up. Like, that would be so fun. And that's just that's a game where you throw a ball around, and that would be make it 100 times better.
Yes. I think also AI could help with the accessibility as well, like on the flip side, where like as a player, if you're struggling with something, it's like, okay, you're not obviously getting what's supposed to be happening here. So we'll help you out, right? And like either provide tips or guides or be like, hey, like you're struggling beating this boss. Do you want us to provide, like, 'cause this is the 10th time you died with this, right? And you keep doing the same thing over and over again. Can we provide you some ideas of like how you might be able to beat this? Like, you know, and it's, again, doesn't have to be utilized, but it's an option maybe for players to be like, oh yeah, please help me, because you're starting to learn how like I play this game. And it could even adapt to like how you want to play a game too, right? Like, maybe you do want it to be even more difficult, or maybe you want it to be easy. It's like, okay, we can adapt to that. We can adapt and change how you want to play this game. Like, again, that's where I think AI can be used intelligently and creatively versus the whole, I need somebody to write a script. Okay. that's like, again, lack of creativity on the, you know, execs part that think that's how AI should be implemented.
Yeah, let it upscale my image to be a fake 4K and then like let the coach remember that he hates me because, you know, I fired him. Don't use it for like, here's an ad of a lady drinking a beer with seven fingers. It's like, we don't need that. Just do the cool stuff with it instead. I actually saw that the other day. It was like, it was like a derby, because the Kentucky Derby just happened recently. It was a derby ad for some beer company. And it was like, this is clearly not a real lady drinking a beer. And it was like, why did you, whatever, every weird beer company.
Yeah. But again, it's a lack of creativity, right? To be like, oh, let's use AI for that. And I'm going to bring this up here. And I mean, you know, it's the things I'm seeing people use AI for is like, hey, we're building this game and we're using, like, we have this person that can pump out art so fast. And I'm like, can they though? Like, are they, like, is that what, like, and that comes into question, right? Like, what is, I guess the question is like, who owns that at some point, right? And like, that's the part that I can't believe companies are like leaning into the art part of things, because of the fact that there are class action lawsuits out there of artists saying, hey, people are using my name as prompts and creating art based on my name. That's not cool. And then there's weird things that people are like, hey, I use these five prompts. Now that's, I own that. I own that art.
I'm
like,
I own the stolen art. It's mine now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so again, it's weird to think that people are leaning into that from an AI perspective. But again, that's the easy aspect of AI. Yeah.
I just want the orc to remember I killed him with bees. That's what I need.
That's all. I love the idea of having a coach remember that I beat them 49-0 nothing. And then really holding a grudge against me for the next 10 years. I think,
let me tell you,
great.
Make me an exec at EA. I'll make all the good decisions.
The other thing that I was going to mention too, besides AI, is AR and VR.
Yeah,
because I think that those are big things. Do you play much VR at all?
I have played VR. I'm not super big into it. I have friends who are like, I have a friend or Chad from Responding Fire owns a Vision Pro. Like, there are people who are...
Oh, really?
Yeah, Chad is... he spends all his money on all the dumb things. I love him, but that man just, like, just spends money on stupid stuff. So, I've been around that technology. Obviously, I like the idea of VR. My son had a VR headset at one point. It is a thing that obviously is here to stay. Because I remember a couple of years ago, it was like, they're going to try to bring it back. I'm like, is this going to work out? Is this going to be a gimmick? Mm. And it's like, it seems like it's worked out as a gimmick so far, but I like that it stayed around. And I, you know, you're obviously about to talk about it, but I really like the idea of like AR being a thing going forward. That would be my biggest hope. I don't even know gaming wise, but just like in real life.
I mean, yeah. I think for me, like VR has been really cool. Like, so I have a Quest 2. And Mike, one of the other guys that's on our podcast, got a Quest 3, and we played walkabout mini golf. And he's just like, I cannot believe how cool this feels and how realistic it feels. Like, you're playing real mini golf. And the other fun thing is, it's like, we're there next to each other just playing mini golf with each other. You know, like, that's really cool. And what AR is doing is allowing, like, you to have, like, They're talking about doing this with D&D games, like having an actual tabletop game where you can play tabletop in AR with your friends, so you can actually play D&D virtually with each other. Like, that's such a cool concept and such a cool thing. And AR and now also hand tracking has come such a long way. Hand tracking, I think, is such a cool concept with VR and AR. And if anybody's listening, they should play Rogue Ascent, because it's really, really good, and it plays with, I mean, really, this is the only way you should be playing that game, is with hand motion controls. It's so good. It's so simple. It's just, you know, this is your gun with your, you know, for those that are obviously listening to the podcast, it's just your, you know, index finger and your thumb, and it works so well. And it all started from a game jam that the guy was like, can I do that? Can it work? Oh yeah, sure it can. Hey, when's have I made a game off this whole thing? But yeah, tech, like VR and AR technology. It's weird because I see, like, obviously Quest is doing a lot with it, right? But it's weird to see PlayStation like lean into it. And then, like, we're flirting with it again, and we don't care about it.
It's weird because from everything I've heard, again, like, Chad buys all of that stuff, and he's super into it. And like, by all accounts, PSVR 2 is like, as a piece of tech, is really, really good. Like, it's got the haptics and like, it feels amazing and great. But then PlayStation was like, here's a game for it. We don't care anymore. Compared to Meta, it was like, it's wireless. You don't need anything else. You can just play it and we're going to support it. So like, it's that weird thing where like, if you want the really, really good experience, like that company isn't supporting it. But if you want the cheaper option, there's like a lot of cool stuff here. But it's also not like quadruple A OLED screens kind of a thing. So
yeah,
there's an interesting medium there. But again, everyone who's into it, I've done it. I did like Star Wars VR and stuff. I'm like, this is cool. This is fun. I like this. But I'm happy that they've stuck. It's been enough years where it's like clearly they're sticking with, a couple people are sticking with it enough where it'll probably stay around for a little while.
Yeah. Especially like, I hope that, you know, Meta, I mean, it seems like they're leaning into it, but yeah, it is weird. Cause like PlayStation, the VR 2 really is, like, I got to play it at PAX West. Cause one of the games there was on the PlayStation VR 2. It was really good. It was awesome. Like the graphics were great. And the only thing I would say is like, again, I'm just so used to playing on the Quest that having a wired headset felt weird. Because I just wanted to walk around and I'm like, oh yeah, I can't do
sit
that.
Sit down, please.
I can't do that. Yeah, exactly. And I ended up, accidentally, not hard, but punching one of the people because like they're standing next to me and I was like, oh my God, I'm so
Should've
sorry.
Been out the way,
and they're like, so do you have any other thoughts around how these technologies are changing the way you play games at all?
No, I think we had some pretty good ones there. Again, I still have half this list to go, so don't worry.
So another question that I have here is, which of these technologies has the potential to be a game changer in the next 5 years? So I'll start with you, Adam. What do you think is the one that has the biggest potential to be the game changer in the next 5 years?
Okay, this is kind of perfect. Kind of piggytails. Not piggytails, not a real word. Things, I was going to say dovetail and pig something in the same time. And I've...
Well, it's a thing now. I'm going to use it
I think
from
it was
now
a thing I heard on Podcast Beyond 17 years ago. And for some reason, it's still in my brain. No, there's been a handheld gaming resurgence. And I think it's only going to get stronger as we go along. So, like, obviously, Nintendo has been doing their thing where they were like a console and a handheld, and then they combined it with the Switch and it was a smash hit, obviously. Mm-hmm. Good. So they stuck with it. But the fact that like Steam was like, again, a company known for like once in a while trying a physical thing and not supporting it. They were like, hey, we're just going to make a handheld PC. And like, by all accounts, like everyone who has a Steam Deck loves a Steam Deck. Boom, like, period. Yeah. And no one's ever complained about it.
Yeah.
But then you've also got your ROG Allies. You got your Lenovo Goes. Again, some of the cloud options on those devices. But it seems like people are like, okay, the Switch is a thing, and people clearly want to have a full console handheld, even if there's some, you know, well, it's not full 4K. You know, there people are okay with that as long as it's portable. And then Steam's like, yeah, sure, let's try that too. And then it's like, oh no, obviously this is working because two people have done it now. So I think going forward, again, we already know Nintendo's already said, we're going to talk about Switch successor next year. So, like, obviously, it's going to be another handheld console hybrid thing, right? So that's at least another 7 or 8 years of this. And I think Steam's going to stick with it, and I think other companies are going to try to jump on that bandwagon. And I think a lot of people dig it, obviously. So I think that is an interesting thing to bring back. For me, I'm really thinking about getting a Steam Deck OLED. That's the one I'm like, if I'm going to get one, that'd probably be the one if I did it. But because there was a time when it didn't seem like it was going to be a thing anymore, right? Because you have, I mean, even the play date, like even that's very niche, but it's like those people who are into it. But again, it was the thing where like, you know, like the 3DS came out. The DS, very, very successful. People liked it. 3DS, a little less so, still did fine, you know, overall. But it's like, okay, doesn't seem to be working out the best, maybe as much as Nintendo wants it. What are they going to do? They pivoted to the Switch. I don't know. It seems like it's going to stay around. And also, I think everyone's worried about mobile phones, obviously, because like everybody owns a mobile phone. Like they'll just game there. And I think it's been proven that people don't want to play quote unquote real games on their phone as much as they want like a dedicated device. So I think that's here to stay for the next 5 years for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think with the cloud based gaming, I think that just opens the door for more handheld as well, right? Like, we already see, well, I mean, the rumors are that Xbox wants to get into that to allow for more handheld. I mean, PlayStation, again, has flirted with this idea, right? Like, I have a Vita. I love the Vita. I think the Vita is awesome. And, you know, but now, of course, they're, I don't even remember what it's called, but whatever the portal.
Where you could stream on a, basically you can stream to one of their controllers. It's basically the way that thing's set up. But it's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. So I would like to see more of that. And again, hopefully that brings down the cost of gaming, right? If they're able to stream like that. I think also with cloud gaming, I think we're going to see more of this. I think we're going to see more subscription-based services. Like Ubisoft Plus, Game Pass,
Nvidia,
things like that. Yeah. And I think, you know, and not a lot of people don't like this idea, right? But I don't know. I mean, it took a long time for people to get used to Netflix. A really long time for that. And now nobody complains, like, well, I don't own any of those movies. Like, nobody complains about that.
No, not at all.
It's a service that you pay, like, $12 a month. I think the people complain is, like, now we're moving back to cable. Like, this whole thing of, like, what we were doing before, right? Of, like, paying. Yeah, exactly. But the idea that, you know, you can play a couple games here and there and I don't have to spend full price and maybe $17 a month and I can play your full library of games for $17 a month, that's pretty awesome, actually. Mm-hmm.
You got to think about it though. Your general audiences are absolutely fine with that. People who are enthusiasts and who are like, so the reason like limited run exists is for like enthusiast weirdos who are like, I've got to have a physical da da da. And like, that's cool. And I'm glad that those companies exist, but your general audience. So I used to work at GameStop, right? A long time. Everyone who likes video games, like, oh, work at GameStop. That'll be great. Anyways. that was the thing. Cause I was there for the, PS4 Xbox One launch and the amount of course, night one, all your enthusiasts, everyone's there super excited. After that first night, everyone who comes in there, I'm going to say 80% of the customers who come in are just like a mom buying a gift for their kid. Like my kid wants the new thing to play Fortnite with his friends. Like your general audience of people who are just like, I don't care. I just want to do the thing as cheap as possible. That's what most of your audience is. So I think subscription service for games is going to be just fine. Again, if you're an enthusiast and you want to spend for a physical thing, that will exist for certain games. I think your general audience is absolutely fine with it's a subscription service on a cloud thing. Whatever, how I can play this, make my kids shut up and play the game as cheap as possible, people are going to be happy to do in bigger numbers than you would ever expect. Because again, your enthusiast is a very small number compared to your general audience. So I think general audiences are going to be super into the idea of pay a little bit a month. It doesn't even, I don't see it come out of my checking account. So it doesn't matter to me. And that's the way that games are going to go forward.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, that's how I played Skull and Bones. I didn't pay for that game. I paid $17 for Ubisoft. And I'm like, and I can cancel at any time. I'm like, I don't know if this is for me. And that's the thing with these subscription services. You could cancel it until the next game comes out. Buy the subscription again for $17. Play it for a month. Cancel it before the month ends. And it was this was a while back, but do you remember when like Ubisoft, when they were coming out with I don't remember what game it was, but they were basically saying how like they're pushing their subscription service, and everybody was like there was a bunch of people that were flipping out about it, saying like, this is ridiculous and I can't believe you're doing this. And like really the person that was, I can't remember his name, but he was the one that was kind of behind the whole subscription services. He basically recommended, listen, get the $17 a month service, play the game when it comes out, and cancel it when the month ends. And then when the next game comes out, do it again.
There's no problem.
Like nobody's going to stop you from doing that.
Yeah. Because the people who are speaking to are the people who would be upset. But again, so many people get subscriptions, forget they have them.
Well, yeah, that's exactly.
And it's like, right? They'll take that money. Or again, if you only want to, if you give us, you know, as a company, if you, let's say you do the Ubisoft Plus for 3 months out of the year, it's like, oh, I want to play Prince of Persia. I beat it a month, I'm done. Well, I want to play Avatar for some reason. Get it for a month and play it, right? You giving them that 17, so basically $60 in a year, they'll rather take that compared to you giving them $0 because you're just don't want to buy the game and you're waiting for a sale.
Yes.
Yeah, fine with that.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're right. You're absolutely right about the $17 a month. Like, that happens to me all the time. I buy something. Oh, it's $12 a month. That seems cheap. And then I forget. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm still paying for that subscription. And then it's too much of a hassle to cancel it. I'm just like, well, I'll just what's $12 a month? I guess I'll just, you know, just keep going with the subscription. The problem is, like, when you have like 8 of these and you're like, oh, I probably should cancel one of
these. Are stacking
like
up.
That's what I do with all my streaming. Yeah, they just all stack up, right? Like all my streaming services. My wife is fine, like getting to the point where it's like, we have all these streaming services, but we don't watch all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but she's doing the same. She's suggesting we do the same thing, which I don't disagree with her. Why don't we just cancel HBO, for instance, mm-hmm. and just pick up Apple and like watch all our shows for Apple for a month, cancel that, go back to Max for a month, watch mm-hmm. that, and you know. It's just the hassle of.
I just think you're right, though. It is a thing that a lot of people are used to. So I think it's a. I don't know where we started on this. We're talking about handheld, but I think subscription services is still a part of like what's going to happen in the future, though. And I think, And again, for the people who really care and want their statues and want your paper and all that stuff, there will be someone there to give it to you if you really want it that bad. But I think they're happy to have you buy a subscription and forget about it. As much as they are for you paying full price, they don't care. As long as you are engaging with their content and giving them money for the thing, they are happy with it. And however, the easiest way for you to give them money as well. So I think that's not going away. Why would you? There's no reason to.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. I think the other thing, I mean, we already talked about this, but I think the biggest potential game changer in the next 5 years is, again, AI. Just opening the doors for people to... And this is really focusing on indie devs, right? But allowing people to do things that they haven't been able to do before. Like if you're a solo developer and you don't know, maybe you don't have a QA team, right? Can you use AI to test your code? Absolutely. Can you use AI for a thought partner around how to market your game? Absolutely. Can you use it for a thought partner to figure out a problem that you're stuck on? Absolutely. Can you use it to help you write code? Yeah. Like, to me, I think that's where the power of AI can really be beneficial, besides the things that we talked about, how to incorporate in a game. But like from a standpoint of indie developers or people that are trying to get into this industry, but they feel like the barrier around like just the knowledge, I just don't have the knowledge of coding or how to test code or even where to start. Like, I feel like AI can be a good thought partner around those things.
Yeah, just like a perfect example of like, so Velatro came out earlier this year. I mean, you reviewed that on Responding Fire. If that, it's a solo developer, I don't know what their talent is or whatever, but if at some point they were like, okay, I need help with a problem and I'll put it in AI. And if that game was made with AI that just didn't steal any art or anything that a creative person made, it was like, oh, I just need help with, I'm being very stupid, level 3, I need help tighten up level 3. Remember how that old thing we used to say, make the jumping better over on there. If they did that and Balatro still came out to be Balatro, who cares? It's a solo developer making a really good, awesome card roguelike. As long as no one's being stolen from and no jobs, it's a solo developer, so you're not stealing jobs from the one person who works there. I don't see personally how that would be a problem. If it's just like, help me with this problem that I don't have the expertise to do.
Right.
That's just me, though.
Agreed. No, I agree. And again, I mean, yes, I understand there's a lot of ethical issues around AI, but it can be used in a lot of really good ways, too, to open doors.
Also not going anywhere, so you got to kind of get used to it.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, right? Like, and I think that's a really good point, because like it isn't going to go anywhere. So like the question then becomes, how do you use ethically, right? And how do you navigate these waters ethically to make sure that you're not... And I mean, unfortunately, we just see a lot of examples of people using it not ethically. Yeah. Unethically is the word I was looking
for. As long
for.
As it's helping, not stealing, I think it's fine.
Yeah.
But...
No. Those were... Oh, no. Actually, I have one more question. Unless you had something else you want to talk about the potential game changers in technology.
Let's hear your last question, then I'll run through these.
Yeah. So my last question is, how have these advances in gaming technology influenced other industries as well?
Oh, this is a good place to put this one. This one is a big one that a lot of companies wanted to do. I think they're still pushing for it. I think it's stupid. I think the only place it's been done right is in gaming. And, of course, I'm talking about metaverse, right? The idea of like,
And it's weird because it was always around. We're like, oh, it's like a digital, like a virtual place where you go and chat with your friends. Maybe like a chat room or you know, whatever. Whatever they think the metaverse is. Yeah. Like obviously a lot of companies are like metaverse this, metaverse that. But the idea that like Fortnite, Minecraft, and Roblox are just three specific, you know, because I have a 13-year-old kid, right? And like him and his friends just play those three games specifically and they just hang out in those games and they're like, I got a silly skin or there's a lot of user created content where it's like me and my friends were going to get in this thing that's like a boxing ring with the Super Saiyan knockoff legally descript Dragon Ball characters or whatever. And they'll just go out and hang out with these kids. And that's what they do all day. And like that is what companies have thought the metaverse was going to be. Yeah. And I feel like in those games, it feels organic and it works. Right. Again, specifically Fortnite, Roblox, Minecraft are the games where you go with your friends and you create stuff and you have fun in a big group with your friends. And I feel like that is the one place it's worked because every other time that they try to do it, it's like, this is bad and corny and like the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Except for like VR chat. That's fun. There's funny stuff in VR chat. But outside of that, I'm like, yeah, these three video games are the only ones who've ever done it right, in my opinion. So I'm like, good for you for doing that. Everyone else learn lessons for them or maybe stop trying. One of the two.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because they not only did they do it, they did it well as well, you know, like, and made it safe, like, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like it's a safer environment, or at least there's safeguards that can make it safe, right? I will tell you, there are times where I jump into VR games, and the things that kids are saying in VR, like kids are saying in VR, I'm like, oh my word, I can't believe you're saying these things, and there's no, like, barrier. There's nothing to, like, stop that behavior from happening, and that's really weird to me. Like, I don't know if it's because it's VR that people think that they can be more, like, I don't know. I don't understand why that is, but it maybe it's just because there is a lack of barrier or lack of, like, not barrier, but a lack of, like, guidelines to, like, help navigate that. But I don't know if you ever experienced that, but I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe some of the things are being said.
I mean, I've been
here
in a Call of Duty chat room, so
that's true. That's a good point. That's a good point. But I mean, like Fortnite, you know, Rocket League 2, like, I feel like there are ways that you can turn that stuff off so you don't have to see that, right? And just like, okay, I'm gonna deal with that. So safeguards is the word I was looking for before.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think for me, like, the biggest one for me is just VR. Like, to me, I am. It amazes me how people are using VR for teaching technical skills, like how to do certain like procedures, like whether it be like something with cars or like putting together, like, you know, dismantling an engine or putting something together, or surgeries on people, like to practice surgery. Like, that's crazy to me. I think that's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, there's some difficult interests. And especially because we've definitely even the edge where, like, you can legitimately learn how to do anything on YouTube. It is wild how much you could. But I would love the idea of, like, okay, let me throw on my glasses. Again, this is some point in the future. Throw on my glasses. Oh, man, I gotta change the spark plug, but I don't know anything about cars. And it's like, all right, type in your VR thing. It's like 2023 Honda Civic spark plug change. And then it's like, okay, open the hood. Does this look the same? Cool. You go here. You go here. You pull that. You switch that. There it is. Pull it out. Get a new one in. Like, that would be amazing and would be help for everybody.
Yeah. Not quite VR because it's not VR, but I mean, it could be used in VR too. I've seen companies use it for not VR, but like simulations, like how to get into, like, truck drivers, for instance, how to get into very difficult situations. Like, oh, this area, this bay, this docking bay is really hard to get to. So we're going to build this whole scenario for you to be able to maneuver in there. So that way you get accustomed to it. So it's not like the first time you're there, like, oh my God, what is this? Or just even navigating through some of the, you know, difficult areas in downtown driving, right? Because it's not easy. Like, but it's just fascinating to me to think that that's a possibility. Or even putting them in, like, think about that. Like, even putting people into situations and seeing how they might react, like putting young drivers into a very difficult situation in a safe environment, like, oh, the roads are slippery and there's somebody crossing the road, what are you gonna do, right? Like,
or old drivers too, they need it.
Yeah that too, right? exactly. But what a fascinating thing. And the other thing with VR, like, I know they gamified this, but like working out like is so like so I have started using Supernatural on VR and I love it and I work out every day because of VR and it amazes me. I expected the demographic to be much younger than me. It's actually about my age or older that actually use it for working out. And I think that's fascinating.
Yeah. You have to gamify that stuff because that's the only way to make it fun. Like for me, even as a kid, like I loved playing football. So like I was running, I was doing all this stuff, but it's because I was playing a game. If it was just like, hey, Adam, go run. Even as a super athletic kid, I'm like, I don't want to run. I don't want to just run. I hated doing sprints, period. But I'm like, you gamify it, make it engaging and interesting. I was like, oh, I can do this all day. I can do this for 3 hours a day. No problem. So I'm like, same thing, you know, Beat Saber or Supernatural, any of that stuff. It's like, oh, well, you're doing a game, but it's really just making your body move and burn calories. As long as you gamify it and make it fun and engaging, it works.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I mean, I think that's the other thing is like just the idea of gaming in general, gamifying things, learning, like gamifying learning has like, I know a lot of people don't like to think about that or like lean into that because it's like, oh, that's not traditionally how learning happens. Well, then you need to think about differently how learning happens because you do see increased engagement when you start using gamification in learning, whether it be kids or even adults. Like gamification is something that helps engagement and helps them attach the concepts much quicker than the traditional just talking at somebody and expecting them to understand what you're doing, right?
Yeah, you
or what you're talking
you never
about.
See the stories of like, oh, there's this you know, this guy made it to the NBA or this dude opened up his company and made $1 million in the first year. You never see them like coming back to their middle school teacher that inspired them and it's like the dude just said open up page 31 and tell me, give me a report at the end of the day. It's always like the teacher who was like memorable and fun and engaging and made learning. Yes. Those kids still learn things. It's just they enjoyed it and they remember that person for that. So I think it does work.
You know? Yeah. Agreed. Do you have anything else on that topic?
Oh, I know. I just have the rest of my list. Do you want me to just throw them or do you got another topic?
Yeah. No, that's the end of my questions that I had.
All right,
I know you had a list.
We went into that one. Yeah, did that one. I'm just putting it. Okay, so some more. These again, the whole topic, the idea was like, technology, gaming technology, innovation, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There's only one company I know who does it super well, and they just announced recently their second game, but camera tracking. I'm thinking specifically your eyes, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that there's an entire game built around a camera looking at your eyes and noticing you blinking. That's it. And they made an entire, and then their new one is it's like, Goodnight Universe, or it's something with like you're a baby in the universe or something.
Yes.
I forget the name of it, but I think that one's supposed to track your face. Is using camera tracking your face.
Yes.
So the fact that someone's like, okay, everyone, especially in 2020, you know, things shut down, everyone went home. Everyone has a webcam. Like everybody and their mom has a webcam or a camera phone. Let's make a game around the idea of something that just simply watching you blink. Like that is such a cool idea. And like, why do people? I'm sure maybe someone has thought of an idea similar to that, but more people need to do that because Before Your Eyes, obviously, very cool game. Let's do more stuff like that. But someone has to be like, what's a weird thing I can do with the webcam and made a really cool game off of it? Like, shout out to them.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I like that.
Yeah.
Have you played that game?
No, I need to.
It was on sale on Steam for like $2. Like, it's also on Netflix Gaming.
Was it really?
So if you have Netflix on your phone, that's a fine way to play it as well.
That's right.
Everyone needs to. Speaking of Netflix, though, I don't know if it's really a gaming technology. Maybe. There are more companies getting into gaming than ever. And I'm wondering if that's a good thing or a bad thing. So we sort of talked to you about how like Stadia like started cloud, but then they didn't stick with it. But like I wrote specifically down that like Netflix and Amazon have gotten into gaming, right?
Yeah.
It's companies that are not manufacturers of a piece of hardware that you put a disc in. But that are still heavily, like, I think Amazon is very heavily involved in gaming, like, having their own games, you know, Twitch, obviously, that whole thing, Luna, another thing. And then, like I said, Netflix, literally, they have a lot of games on their server. They don't advertise it as often as I think they should. They have a lot of amazing, really, really good games, a lot of story-based games, a lot of really good stuff. They publish games, like Oxenfree 2 was a Netflix-published game. And it's wild for that, again, it's just a company trying to expand and make more money. But like,
again, it's a scary time because everyone gets laid off for doing anything. But yeah. More investment in companies that wouldn't traditionally invest, I think if they keep with it, could be cool. Because then you just get more opportunities for games and teams that wouldn't get able to do it before. Because again, in a landscape where it's hard to get funding and it's hard to get things without being worried about what your job is, if more mega, you don't want to say this, if you can take more money from mega corporations, the better, I suppose. They've got a lot of it. If you can take it and make your dream project, I guess that's good.
Yeah. I think that's interesting too. Like, because the other thing that, and I wonder if Netflix is ever going to go this route. Well, they kind of do already. But the crossover between the media, between gaming and then, you know, movies and TV shows, right? Like, I know that they have a lot of game-based shows that are Netflix originals that are on Netflix. But I don't know if you ever played this game. It was Defiance.
Oh, yeah.
Defiance.
I remember. Defiance. Yeah, Defiance. I remember this one.
Defiance, yeah. Do you remember the premise behind that game? The premise was awesome. What happens in the TV show affects the game. What happens in the game affects the TV show. It didn't work because...
It was like, a sci-fi original. It did not work very well.
Yeah, it did not work. But the premise was really awesome. Like, it was such a great idea. And somebody like Netflix coming in, like, and again, I think this is the hard part, right? Because you have to make sure, like, there's respect across both sides. But, like, having writers that be able to write content for both TV shows and for the games and having impact in both of those types of things would be so cool. Would be such an immersive experience for people that are just enjoy watching the show and maybe getting tied into the game, or people that play the game and saying, hey, like, what, I kind of want to watch the show now and see like what's going on in the show, right? Like, there's opportunity there, whether or not they ever tap into that, I don't know, but feels like there's opportunity there.
I mean, we've seen it, like Fallout came out, people were super into the show, and then like,
yeah, that's true, and now they're buying it, right? Yeah. Like, they're buying
the game. Was like, we saw a 10,792 increase on Fallout 4 last week. I wonder why. It's like, yeah, because
yeah, I wonder
people
why.
Watched the TV show and liked it. Here's a $1 million idea for you though. Phil Spencer maybe could use some good PR lately. I don't know why, just throwing that out there. I like Phil, but some things are happening in that company people are upset about, rightfully so. This is perfect idea. You could do this as a, so remember, maybe 2021, somewhere in there. What was that quiz app that everyone was super into? That they would do quizzes like twice a day and you would be in the... And it had like the host and he's like, hey, we're here for the quiz thing. And it was like live.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it.
I don't remember either.
But it was like you would win real money if you like got to the end of it, right?
Yeah.
Xbox 360, an arcade game called One Versus 100. And it was a live quiz show game where you would play the video game, would be either the one or the 100. And it was a quiz show. And it's like this one person against the whole, the mob. And then at the end, you would win like $10 Xbox Live credit or something like that if you won the whole thing. But think about that. Netflix having a show, because Netflix has been doing a lot more live stuff now. Like, they've got boxing matches. They have the Roast a Ton. There's a lot of stuff that's like live.
WWE.
Yeah, they're getting WWE next year. Yeah. I bring back One Versus 100, like legitimately, like have a TV show, you have it on certain nights or whatever live because people like quizzes, and then you can play on your phone as part of the mob, and then you can have a person in studio being the One Versus 100. Again, Netflix, make me CEO, give me some money. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, it seems like, again, right? Like, it seems like a, and maybe they are tapping into this, but it seems like a lack of imagination of like, doing it, like, this seems like a no-brainer. Like, why wouldn't you do something like this, right? Yeah. Like, maybe it's lack of imagination, maybe it's the fact that maybe executives should be stop cutting people that have ideas and are the ones that are actually carrying the company. I don't know.
Like, I'll give it to you for $10,000. You can take that idea. I'm using your old IP to pitch a show to Netflix. I won't cost you anything. Just what you want to hear, right? But no, I think that would be a good idea. And again, that's the whole more companies getting into it. But anyways, three more things. So I've loved how this last generation, we've gotten more into accessibility options, right? So between obviously games doing it, being like, okay, just like the whole thing, it's wild. You listen to a lot of gaming podcasts and you're like kind of like in the world or whatever. Isn't it weird how many people are colorblind in the gaming journalism space? I would have no idea, but But it's like a lot of the big names are like, oh yeah, I'm colorblind. It's like, how are, why is half of the gaming journalists colorblind? It's crazy. But again, those kind of options. But there's a lot of things like Another Crab's Treasure, which is a Souls-like game. Mm. There's a lot of things you're like, hey, just to make the game easier or just tailor it to you. They're like, we know this is a difficult game. Cool like that. But then going further than that, with the Xbox and PlayStation having accessible specific controllers. I kind of can't remember the name of it. I'm forgetting it. But it had like the Xbox one had the two pads and had like the attachments and stuff. And the PlayStation one was like a circle with like the buttons and you could do that. And it's, these are specifically for like people who are not able to hold a controller, like a normal stock controller. Here's accessibility options for you to like customize and do the, whatever you need to do to help you out. So it's like, oh, here's a product to help everybody. And again, you would have not gotten that in the original Xbox, the N64. Like, you were never getting any of that stuff. Like, you would like get a Mad Catz controller, which felt worse, is what you would get.
But it was cheaper.
It was cheaper.
But it was cheaper.
It was cheaper for a reason. But now they're like, here's an option for like, you know, I don't have great motor skills with my left hand. Well, here, take this. And you can still play games and you can still enjoy the hobby just like everybody else. And again, that is not a thing that happened 5-10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, there's a lot of people in the industry that have pioneered that and been the voice of that. So thank God for that. I also think that because gaming has become more prevalent in our society and in our culture, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like that has helped quite a bit in that realm. So, I agree. I 100% like, that's awesome. Glad you brought that up. Yeah.
All right. I've got two more. These are cool. Actually, no, I have three more. Haptics and HD Rumble. I know PlayStation's like, oh, we've got these haptics. You can feel the raindrops punching you right in the gut whenever you do whatever. And then Nintendo's like, you can feel the ice cubes or whatever nonsense they did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The 1-2-3 switch.
As silly as the marketing and stuff for it, it is cool. I do like having that super precise rumble. It's just like a fun little thing. Like, it's weird. And so like for me, the triggers on the play, I turn off personally because I don't like having resistance and triggers. I think that feels awful.
Yeah.
But I do love playing Spider-Man and like when he's walking outside and there's rain, like feeling the raindrops. Like that's or I guess that was Returnal more than
that
anything.
That is pretty cool.
Super cool. Like that's awesome. Again. Switch, it depends on what the game is, but there's a lot of stuff it's like, oh, I can feel it like moving around, cool stuff, like let's keep that technology going forever.
But it's funny, can I just say that real quick? It was funny because my wife was playing, I don't remember what game it was, she was playing something with me and it was on the Switch and she's like, why is the controller rumbling so bad, oh my god. And I was like, well, yeah, I mean that's it. But it was like a weird situation. I was like, they like leaned into it too hard and it just felt really awkward and not
they turned all those motors to max immediately.
Yeah, exactly.
It's too good, but I like that, let's keep that up.
For
sure. And then we have cross-platform play.
Oh yeah,
I will.
Oh my gosh, yes,
thank god that Epic made a game that was so massive, they bullied everybody into doing crossplay.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, yo, if you want the most popular game in the universe on your platform, you got to let us do this. And they literally forced everyone's like, what, the safety of the kids, AKA, I want to keep as much money in my pocket as possible. I don't want to share any revenue with anybody else. They're like, too bad, you're going to do it. And they literally forced it. And thank God, it's so good. It's so great.
Yeah.
Like, it's a win-win for gamers. Like, you don't have a loss there.
Yeah.
And we live in a time where no one thought that was gonna happen. It was like, where are you playing this game at? Oh, I bought it on PlayStation. Well, I have an Xbox, so I guess we'll never play this video game together because I'm not gonna buy it again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because like that's the first thing I'll do now is, does this game have crossplay compatibility? If it doesn't, I probably won't buy it.
If it's a multiplayer game, especially, no. I'm good.
Yeah. What's the point? Yeah. Yeah. Like it's fun, like even Faithfarm, that just came out late last year. Crossplay compatible. I'm like, that's awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, given shots at Xbox, given some shots at Sony, you know, again, they obviously reversed what they were doing. Helldivers 2. Helldivers 2 being one of the biggest successes of the year. And again, a lot of the players, I would probably say majority of the players for that video game are on PC.
Yeah.
And like, that's because they were like, okay, we're not gonna put it everywhere, but we're gonna put it multiple places because the multiplayer game, people enjoy it. And it's like, whenever they tried to do weird things that Sony wanted to do to mess with, people flipped out and they rightfully reversed it. And I'm like, that's because this game is crossplay. That's why this game is so successful.
Yeah, I agree.
I think so.
Yeah.
And my last one, and this one, I want to ask you the first time you ever saw it and how it makes you feel. This actually might be the biggest innovation of all time. When you see it, you like really get it. But when you just hear about it, maybe not. When's the first time you ever saw ray tracing?
I don't know. It might have been Spider-Man, maybe.
PS5, like the remaster of the original.
Yeah, the remastered stuff.
With the glass and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
All the cars being reflected.
It was pretty awesome. Yeah. It's so amazing.
Let me tell you, ray tracing might be the best thing that's actually happened this generation. Yeah. I remember the early videos of like, here's Minecraft with ray tracing, and people didn't really understand what ray tracing was yet, but it's like, that's not Minecraft. That's a real video game that looks blocky for some weird reason. But just so I have a basic explanation, because there's a difference between ray tracing and real-time reflections or whatever, which is sometimes games will be just like, oh, it's ray tracing, and it's just reflections.
Yeah.
Ray tracing technology simulates the interaction of light with virtual objects. Real-time ray tracing is going to be the trend next year. I copied and pasted this from a website explaining what ray tracing is. It's going to be the trend next year as it offers realistic reflections, shadows, and global illumination, elevating the overall visual fidelity and creating more lifelike game worlds. It legitimately just makes things look better. And it's weird whenever when you go back to a game that obviously had old school lighting where it's like, oh, this light source here and then this weird shadow. And then you play and it's like, oh, man, this like that looks awful. That looks awful. Why did I like that? Why did I think that Splinter Cell 1 looked good? Love Splinter Cell 1. Doesn't look good, though. But for me, the first one I ever did it was for Control. When I got my PC and I was like, all right, I'll try Control out. And the options on it, they had so many ray tracing options. But one of the coolest things I did was, when you're in the office at the very beginning, I turned them all on and it's like they have so many levels. So you can only see it again when you turn the camera a certain way and see the reflections of the light where you would see, because like at the very beginning of the game, like Ati's like mopping the floor or whatever. And if you look at the right angle, you can see the skid marks of the mop where it had moved across the floor, but only if you're looking at at an angle. You go into the office and it's like you look at a picture on the wall, like in a glass frame. And if you turn it and look where a light source is behind it, like, you know, whenever like a glare and like you can't see what's on the glass, there's a glare in this video game. If there's a light coming through a window, it gets diffused through the window before it gets to your character. So literally a light in the other side of the office looks different when you're in the office compared to when you're outside of the office. I'm like, this is wild. It's amazing. And that was just like, I don't ever want to play anything without ray tracing because it just doesn't feel as good. And I wonder if that technology has helped other people. Like, I wonder if animators for like, you know, Pixar, Disney, you know, DreamWorks, whoever, I wonder if they're able to use that technology and stuff. Cause you look at animated movies nowadays, again, they've always looked really cool, but like watching Toy Story 1 to Toy Story 4, you're like, man, y'all figure this out. Again, I have no idea if that ray tracing helps or if that's even inspiration or whatever. But the graphical fidelity that I've seen with games with like ray tracing turned up to 1,000 is insane. That's what I'm most happy about.
It's interesting. It's interesting you said about the Toy Story things, because the animators in the later, I think it was like 3 or 4. I'm not sure which one it was. Maybe it was 4. You know, because it's a whole new set of animators, right? Because the technology has advanced so much, they actually had to dumb down the technology so it didn't look so different than the original. But the thing that they said was it was impressive to go through what those animators did for Toy Story 1 and the technology they had and what they did and how they made the things work the way they made it work with like lack of the technology that they have.
They had like a server farm in 1999 to make Woody look vinyl, and like it literally took 1,000 computers a week to make Woody look shiny. And it's like, that's wild that they did that back then.
Well, and so, I mean, from a technical standpoint, right, like lighting is really expensive in regards to like the cost of the processing lighting is very, very expensive. Right. So like baking lighting in and stuff like that is like what a lot of people do. But that technology and like I think it's a go back to AI, right? The technology and then implementing it with AI and like using it to think through like what's the best cost effective way so that the processing power doesn't just chug here. Like, I think is like where we're going to see things go. And that's where I think it's not so much the hardware, but how to use that hardware more efficiently, right?
Absolutely. So. Just think about, like, look at horror games that have, that use ray tracing, and just like looking into a shadow and it being like actually pitch black. Like there's actually no light here.
Yeah. So good. That's scary. Yeah. It's so scary. It's so scary.
So good.
anything else you wanted to talk about, Adam, before? I mean, I'll want you to plug your podcast, but any other
technology? Only you can see this because this is a video audio, but these were my notes about what I wanted to do.
Nice.
I got through them all.
Nice.
But no, that is all my notes about technology. There's a lot of cool stuff out there, guys. Yeah, enjoy it.
There's a lot of cool stuff. Well, before we head out, how can people find you and follow you on social media and plug your podcast?
Yeah. So me personally, I'm at Adam Gumby on Twitter. If you want to come check it out, tweet about stuff all the time. Good stuff. You'll enjoy it. It's very fun. But then as for the show, it's Responding Fire. It's on podcast and YouTube, youtube.com/@Responding Fire. It's also a Patreon. You can get like those game show things for like a buck. I don't normally plug it, but patreon.com/Responding Fire. Spend a dollar to just like get us. God, man, dude. So we recorded a Rafferty, quote unquote, live from Boston. So that was up early for a month over there. But like playing a quiz game in person was super, super fun. And also, I'm not going to say too much, but Massachusetts, weed products and edibles are legal. So
I didn't, you know. The funny thing is, I didn't know that.
Well, I found out when I got there.
I know. I did too. Because it's really, well, I was like, "Do you?" I was there with my wife, right? And I said, "Do you smell that?" Yeah, it's probably just, you know, somebody. And then also, we're because like I have really bad hip pain, so I use a lot of like CBD products. Like, so we walked in, I'm like, oh no, you actually sell the shit here. This is amazing. Hey. Like, sign me up.
So I'm just saying, if you want to watch somebody do trivia, maybe under the influence of 7 edible gummies in a single night, check out Responding Fire. Look for that Rafferty episode.
Oh, that's awesome. Adam, it was really fun having you on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. And I hope you come back. I want you to come back. Thanks for having me.
A ton of fun, man. I was like, we've been needing to do stuff for a while, so it's good to get it down and recorded. But yeah, I'm down for anything. Anything goofy. Nice. I'm here for it.
Listeners, give Adam's podcast a follow. I'll put links in the show notes. Go give them a 5-star review as well, and listen to the podcast. Listeners, also give us a review as well. We want to hear what you have to say about the show. With that, everyone, stay safe and game on, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye.